Welcome back to the Petcash Pod presented by ProFluence Sports. I'm your host, Andrew Petcash. As always, you can listen to the amazing conversations at ProFluence.com. Check it out there in the podcast section. We're at over 125 guests now. Pretty incredible. Today's was another amazing one. We had the head of evangelism at Databricks. They are one of the largest private companies that is not yet public, multi-billion dollars in revenue a year. The head of evangelism, Ari Kaplan, came on. He's a leading influencer in analytics, artificial intelligence, data science, and business innovation. Super fascinating background and a lot of cool things, including he was Data Robots' global AI evangelist. He was a VP of analytics at Nielsen, went to Caltech. He helped the Chicago Cubs set up their analytics department, sits on Intel's AI board of advisors, so much more. We dive into it. It's fascinating. I'm going to be listening multiple times. So much to learn. So without further ado, let's dive right in. All right. Appreciate you hopping on today. This is a unique one from your background, diving much deeper. We've had some cool people from Sport Radar and some machine learning and AI people, but this is a mix of everything and applied to a real sport. I just want to start here. You know, give us where you're at currently. I know you made the jump to Databricks and you've been at a bunch of conferences. You know, what's the state of this innovation in sports today? And we'll work it from there and work it backwards and then forward again.
Great. Well, Andrew, thanks for having me and appreciate all the listeners. And, you know, you mentioned Databricks. My role is head of technical evangelism. And if people out there listening haven't heard of Databricks, we're one of the leading data and AI and now Gen AI companies out there, one of the five largest private tech companies out there in the world, grown quickly, but helping every industry, but certainly sports, media, entertainment, one of the big ones, in making sense out of all the vast amount of data that they're collecting, making it easier for non-technical people to democratize what they're doing. So at the end result, whether you're helping athletes, whether you're helping the coaches, whether you're helping the business or marketing side, or like even social media, outreaching to your fans, this is where like data and AI is really at the forefront, but it all comes down to like playing better, playing more effectively, having a strategy in place and making sure your fans have the best experience that they can. So that's kind of where I am now. And you had mentioned a couple of conferences. I was just at Sports Innovation in Dusseldorf, Germany. It was about 2,000 attendees, the latest and greatest sports-related technology. What was unique about that is they had a football field, both European football, and they had, you know, the NFL representative come out for U.S.-style football. And you could see right then and there, whether it's wearable sensors, whether it's camera tracking technology, augmented reality, so you're in the stadium with a VR, AR, as the game's happening, you could see how AI is actually helping now and painting the picture. Some of these things are not production ready, but like what's coming out in the next couple of years. So that event and then MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference in Boston is like the premier event for the United States. So got the best of both worlds. It's an exciting time.
Any technologies, whether you saw there just in general, that excite you the most?
Well, the one that excites me the most, of course, is Databricks, where I'm at, like super fast growing. But the reason it excites me is, you know, in the past, you would have two main types of data for sports. You'd have structured data. So like what events happened? Did they get a hit or not? Did they throw a fastball or a curveball? So that's structured data. How many goals did someone score? How many baskets and rebounds? And then there's unstructured data. What are the fans writing in about? What marketing campaigns are resonating? Or in the game, like what can we make from the video? Is this player running? Is this player dribbling? What are their ball skills? How far is the ball from their legs? Like one of the skill sets of Messi is not let the ball ever get too far from him. All those things are what you can now quantify with unstructured. So Databricks created many years ago lakehouse technology where you could do structured, unstructured database in one environment. And it became so successful that about 75% of all industries, companies now have a lakehouse. Databricks are one of our competitors. But that's super exciting. But now the last year and a half, Gen AI kind of is what everyone's talking about. Every generation is like seeing it's a game changer, and no pun intended. And in sports, definitely a game changer. But Databricks is like right in the center of it. You have OpenAI and Anthropic as like the generalized AI, you know, make cool videos and make a new Beatles song. And then for businesses, when you want to understand your own corporate data, so if it's sports, understand what your medical information says, understand what your scouts are writing about your players. For Perfect Game, understand what hundreds of thousands of youth are going through. Databricks is the leader now for businesses that want to understand data that's not just out there in the world that they own. So that's what excites me the most. And then beyond Databricks, the big thing has been like video capture, which in baseball has been around a while, but in other sports, NHL, NFL, it's arguably the first real year that they're being implemented. And then, understanding strengths, weaknesses of habits of players is great, but the fan experience, you know, hold on to your seats, no pun intended. I've tried like VR, AR in the game, like in the stadium. I've tried it at home. You know, that's a couple years away, but that is going to really enhance everyone's experience.
And Databricks had a pretty influential impact on the Texas Rangers winning this last World Series, which I'm sure was sweet to home for you coming from the, and I'll let you go into it, but your whole, not only data analytics, but background in baseball as well. And so curious, what was some of the work you did there with the Rangers? And then also your background, and I know you've worked with a ton of different teams, and it's been a 30, 40 year journey into just that. So I'm curious on the mix of Databricks, data analytics, and baseball.
You know, this is now my 35th season involved in professional sports, so more than a third of a century. Pretty wild, seen a lot of changes, but working last year, really give all the credit to the Texas Rangers, Alexander Booth and team. But yeah, Databricks was behind the scenes, like an enabler of their like data insights. So the ability to ingest all sorts of data used to be very like so time consuming. You know, you're talking about terabytes of data for every game, and Hawkeye technology, you know, multiple hundreds of times a second, everything happening on the field. And then all of a sudden they introduced Hawkeye to AAA baseball in the minor leagues. So the data just for that one vendor, it's Major League Baseball in this case, that doubled from Major League to AAA. And the time to ingest and merge the data, at least will double. So Databricks helped do that extremely cost effectively. That's one of the benefits, is you can scale to trillions of records with Databricks. You could ingest things, process things on orders of magnitude, depending on your scenario, faster, less expensive, and simpler. So that enabled the Rangers to like ingest all the data, process it pretty quickly, and then democratize it. The other challenge people have is you collect all this data, Kinetrax, player tracking, heart rate monitoring, scouting reports, and it just kind of sits there and you don't know who's using it, who's not. Generally, for a non-technical person to make sense of the data, you have to get a technical group involved. But the Rangers used Databricks to just let, see why their GM, he doesn't really need to know technology. He just wants to know, what are the chances of, DeGrom getting injured? What are, should we sign Carter? Should we send him up to the majors? Decisions like that could be more comprehensive if you have more data to analyze appropriately. And that data could be your scouting reports, your injury information. You could use it to pull in data from Perfect Game. You could look at video of them in Little League, high school, college, and make sense of it through AI now.
Pretty crazy. How have you seen this evolve over time? Obviously, I'm sure it wasn't like this when you were getting going.
Yeah, well, when I started getting going, it was just basically play-by-play data. You get one row for like the end event. And then in 2007, so not too long ago, but decently long enough ago, was when Sport Vision came out with that yellow line and football and the – well, they came out with the yellow line a couple of years earlier, but
yep.
2007 was when it was introduced into baseball. And that opened up the actual trajectory of the pitch, the spin, and that was more data. And then TrackMan and now Hawkeye makes more and more fine-grained. And now I saw like in the Germany Sports Innovation that Second Spectrum now has mesh tracking. So before mesh tracking, it was like your eyes, your nose, about 19 limbs. And now it's like the actual contour of all of your body. Tremendous more data. Most of it doesn't add much, but that when you talk about dribbling in basketball or when you talk about foot skills in soccer or NFL, like tackling, that is where mesh technology really can come in handy. So yeah, that it just keeps getting better and better. What we're tracking with medical, with plate sensors on the bat of where the pressure is on each hand, you just get more and more. But still doesn't – just having data doesn't solve it all. It gives you information and you still need people to interpret it, people who know the game. One thing I love about – like let's just take baseball, for example. There's like 100 different types of batting stances. You can have some batters hold the bat up, Craig Counsell style. Some hold it back. It just depends on your strength and how quick your muscles are, your eye-hand coordination. So there's no one optimal result. And there's this whole subset of the sports data, which is like kinematic sequencing. How do you perform? How do you do your workload management? That's kind of like one of the big gaps in the game. How do you individualize to tell, Andrew, you have this batting stance that's more optimal than me. You're stronger, but I may have faster hands or something. So then that's like some other innovations of but you still need people that understand the business to be able to make sense of the data. And it's a collaborative process.
Yeah. And what's the mix of, when you go into the Rangers, like how many different people touch this? What's the balance between internal versus third party, which is what Databricks is to the Rangers, and how do you keep that all clean?
Yeah, all teams have a variety. Like in baseball, a team of 10, 20, 30, 40 data people that could be data engineers, quality people, hardcore, hacker programmers. In other sports, I'm talking to folks from the NFL, I think they all have at least one person, but some teams just have one person or two or three people. And then, there are consulting vendors out there like Lovelytics and Genius Sports. And, of course, Databricks, we'd be happy to help out there as well. But teams generally like to build their own. I should also say Gemini Sports Analytics, one of my other favorites, but you could build on your own. You could augment it with external people. But yeah, with Databricks, it's mostly, we have a platform to help the teams themselves accelerate it. You also have this great marketplace, companies like SportLogic, like KinaTrax can put their data on the marketplace and then the teams can access it without having to move the data everywhere. And then solution accelerators, things to make like your marketing analytics. You don't have to start from scratch. You could, these solution accelerators may get you whatever the number is, 75% of the way there and just accelerates. You still have to do the final work, but it accelerates teams implementing use cases for data, AI, and Gen AI.
And what's your thoughts around for decision making? Because you see this in basically every industry now, but you have the data and the data-driven approach, and you have the called emotional or human or instinctual approach. How do you see that balance? Are you seeing it shift, or what are some of your insights having been on both sides and then obviously leaning and helping a lot more on the data-driven side?
Yeah, you know, great fundamental question. And with sports especially, this is human, this is modeling human behavior. So if you model like a stock or like a price of a product, there is some human behavior in it, but it's more of an exact science. But these are athletes. Like before the podcast, we were talking NCAA and like UIUC, had a 30-0 run against them, missing a lot of shots. Like they're humans. Sometimes you can adjust, sometimes you don't. There's emotion behind it that definitely affects things. I've also been honored to have been a major league scout and a minor league scout, looking at anything I can get, whether it's data or like actually watching them, and how to combine that. And it's, there's no one answer, from the scouting, from the analytics, it's looking at what happened in the past, comparing them to similar players at the time, and then trying to project forward. And with scouting, it's all about, depending on your level, you have somebody who's in high school and the level of competition is so different than the professional that you can't really look at the results. You have to look at, can they adjust? Do they have the raw talent? Are they willing to adjust? So if you go through, or they go through your player development, are they like, what potential do you have? So that's where like both data, data can show you what their maximum characteristics are. Like with pitching, if you could throw 94 miles an hour in high school, you could throw 94 miles an hour in any stadium out there. So it at least gives you a baseline, but you need to still merge that with scouting. And then it's not always what you call in technology Boolean, like should we sign this player, yes or no, but like what are the options? Should we sign a player, or who do we have in our minor leagues that might be ready to be called up in a couple of years? How much does it cost? Sometimes the agent, like the fan doesn't know, you can't just sign somebody. The agent may be pressing for an 8-year contract, and you may have a minor leaguer you like ready in 3 or 4 years. So that kind of nixes some of the deals. So it's a combination of using data and like the gut feel. And how coachable are they to make your best decisions?
In your personal life, I know you brought it up, but even in your bracket, you said you've done it one time, you won it, you've put 300 hours in, all from a data-driven approach. Of your personal life and decisions, are you applying data to most everything, or even for you, what's the split?
Yeah, it depends what I'm doing. Like my kids just trying to pick colleges, so it's very data driven, like what type of school, location, cost, scholarships, reputation, graduation retention rate. That's super data driven. But then again, it's just going to come down to feel. Like, do you get a good feel when you walk on the campus, like I belong here, which you can't quantify. My finances, I'm heavily quantified at Databricks. There's OKRs, which are like, how do you measure your success? Of you wrote a blog, I'm on this podcast. What are the goals, and how do you attribute that? So that's kind of data driven. But then again, I come on, like I was on Marquee Sports Network that went to 3 million homes, and that's like crazy quantification, since that's like a whole new audience that didn't happen before. So yeah, I'd say a little of each through my life.
Very cool. Question. Yeah. And from AI now, is as that's evolving, I know you have a bunch of, I think you were on like Intel or their AI board. So some pretty cool, maybe it was like a robot AI company or something as well, somewhere in there. Is that sort of solving that gap in between the data analytics and the human emotion? Do you think that shifts it more where it makes more decisions for you, or where do you see that playing out because obviously AI is super, super hot topic that I'm sure you've been studying and in the weeds with for a long time, but has only recently become mainstream.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And there's, when I hear AI, there's like two major buckets. One is traditional AI and one is the newer gen AI. So traditional AI doesn't really take as much an effect, like the feeling, like it doesn't feel, it's more like predict what will my sales be based on the past? Where might my supply chain break down? How should I price a product based on the past? And that's very like mathematically driven, more advanced as what's called an expert system or rule-based. You know, if a player got injured, run this model. If a player didn't get injured, run a different model. If they had Tommy John surgery, run a third model. But still, each of those models are pretty much math complex math formulas. And now you have Gen AI, which is a math formula when it comes down to it. But you're talking, you know, tens of billions of parameters and trillions of points of data that it's trained on. So that actually feels like more emotive. You could even say, you know, like the Texas Rangers use LLMs to summarize scouting reports. It's tedious to read 20 scouting reports, and you just want to go, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, did our scouts like him or not? Or what did they rate their fastball on a scale of 1 to 10? So that is, you know, and you have a feel of how good, what were the results of that. You could also say, like, write this result with empathy, write this result more technical or more passionately. So Gen AI, and we're only a year and a half in, and things are happening so quickly. Databricks just last week released DBRX, which is more performative, more cost-effective, and then more accurate based on these benchmarks than anything out there. But, you know, wait 3-4 months and think that the whole world is going to be progressing to the next thing. So right now, like, I feel when I interact with Gen AI that it's pretty insanely good. Like I say, summarize these 20 scouting reports. I pretty much agree with it. You know, it's good enough for my needs, but a year from now, things are, you know, like all of human knowledge will be combined and you'll get specialized LLMs. And let me just delve on that for a second. So general AI, like if you use ChatGPT, it has information on World War II and Taylor Swift. But when you talk about sports, like the word deceptive for a pitcher, it's a good thing. The batter doesn't know what pitch type or location's coming, but that could be, you know, bad. Or you could say, you know, the pitcher ran out of gas and an LLM has no idea what that means. Right. So we're going to get more and more specialized LLM, like one that understands sports, one that understands marketing, one that understands like weather patterns. And then you're going to chain these models together to get like even better results than what we're seeing now, if you could believe that.
So you have the math, your traditional AI machine learning, you have the generative AI, which is pretty new. What's on the horizon of that? Is that AGI or where's, is there another gap or do we not know? Or what are you at least seeing or your thoughts based on having been a part of all the evolutions?
Yeah, no, there is, the things are accelerating since, you know, the kind of the bottleneck are people with skills that know how to like iterate on, like make new models and then getting compute power. There's like only so much compute power in the world, but yeah, eventually, you know, however you define AGI, but the knowledge of Gen AI, you know, is going to be, you know, at some point as good as a human, then at some point as good as a team of humans, and then as a whole civilization. At some point, once we get enough compute, and that, you know, I used to say, oh, maybe 100 years, and then maybe 50 years, but, you know, maybe I say maybe 10 years. Elon Musk, I think, went on saying it could be 1 to 5 years, but whatever it is, it's not like suddenly a switch turns on, but you know, along the way, it's just going to get better and better. And not just with text, but with like any type of information. We've already seen video generation, audio generation, image generation. Who knows what's next? So for businesses, it's going to like, you know, a good and bad. It's going to make the marketing more targeted. Like personally, I use TikTok. I'll admit it. And I get targeted ads that are really good and I pay money for it and I'm very happy. And I only, not only, but a higher percent of ads are targeted to me better than any other platform. But, you know, in the future, you're going to get like just-in-time manufacturing to come out with products that are awesome. You're going to get like video games, which I'm a fan of, that kind of create themselves as you play, entertainment that kind of choose your own adventure that is automatically generated better than ever before. Those are just my guesses, but you, you know, the price point to be able to do Gen AI is crashing down. It used to be, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to do an open AI, but you could do decent ones for like tens of thousands of dollars. You could do what's called fine tuning or RAG, retrieval augmented generation, for, you know, the, about the cup of coffee, which used to cost $100,000. So the price point's coming down and it's getting easier and easier to do it. And I would say the one other thing that people also don't always bring up, you know, it's minute whatever. I didn't think of it until just now, but code generation, like the ability to write programming, you know, like SQL, Python, R, is accelerating. You know, right now, you get, it's basically the level of like a college grad, you know, entry level person. And now you're doing software engineering and product, like creating software products. Write a video game that does this. Write a word processing application that does that, that is only like a month or two old. And that's going to get better and better. That's just one idea. But yeah, other professions, anywhere, you know, you're filing taxes or, you know, I don't know, you're doing some information process is going to get more and more automated. And who knows? There's hopefully a lot of smart people working in their proverbial garages coming up with cool ideas that will change the world.
How do you define AGI? I know you mentioned that you can define it different ways. I'm curious your thoughts on it because you said sort of could be, I mean, Elon Musk could be very short term. It could take a long time. Could be anywhere in between.
Yeah. I don't have like a full on definition, but kind of like the Turing test, which is once you don't really know the difference, then it kind of doesn't matter. But something that generally, like you and I are talking, you can ask questions on any subject and it would know as not only as good as a human, but be able to give like responses with empathy that you can't tell the difference, but you will be able to tell the difference since like you ask me questions. My knowledge is only so much, but this will have like the sources of every book ever written, every newspaper article ever written, which is, you know, beyond, I can assume you, but beyond me for sure.
Yeah. It's cool times. I will say a lot of you can take either, you know, glass half empty, glass half full. It's pretty cool where we're headed to be living during this time period. Maybe it's already happened before, you know, who knows, but, anyway, we'll save those conversations for a beer and another time.
Yeah.
But you know, all right, appreciate you coming on. I guess the last thing is, you know, we've gone through the trend, so we don't need to touch on that, but any advice to the people working on a cool sports thing in their garage or looking to, you know, enter a sports data analytics or AI or any gaps you see that someone should go build?
Yeah, well, a quick shout out that I'm an instructor at Sports Management Worldwide, smww.org. And, you know, those are like online, you know, I have overall sports analytics and baseball analytics, but you know, that's like one of the goals is to help get people a job in the game. And it could be working for a team, which for me and most of the people that I know, that's like the ultimate goal. There are like third-party vendors out there that you know, collect data or do consulting. That's pretty cool. There's, you know, media. You could be scouting, but you know, And then there's like coming up with something completely new. So almost like creating your own like next thing. And, you know, some people are working on that as well. The next innovative data collection or, you know, sensor or anything like that. But regardless, there are a couple of key events. There's that Sloan Analytics Conference. There's Sabre, S-A-B-R, couple times a year in local chapters. That's baseball specific. If you're looking to see what jobs are open, Teamwork Online is by far like the number one portal where there's like Davis thousands and of jobs. Yeah. And yeah, just start looking what's out there. Look at the job opportunities. See what skills there are for the job you want. Start applying. And if there's any gap you have, like for the pure analytics, it's Python, R, SQL, are the main ones. If you don't have those skills, kind of brush up on it. Start making your own projects. Try collecting data. Kaggle, K-A-G-G-L-E, is a website that has tons of free sports across every sports data sets that you could use, download sample code that you could kind of see what other people did. And then, yeah, just make it your own. Pick a player, make a projection, do an analysis, send it off to your team, build up a portfolio of your own programs or visuals, or if program is not your thing, you know, like a project where you analyze a free agent trade or something, and then just send it off to teams as examples.
I love it. Yeah, take initiative basically, right?
Yeah, for sure. Be persistent. You're going to get tons of you're going to get tons of like nobody, like everyone ghosting you. You'll get a handful of no's, and, you know, sometimes you'll get yeses. Sometimes, you know, you get to the interview and, but you say, you know, the interview doesn't pan out, but, you know, each one just take as a learning. LinkedIn is a great tool that I like to just send emails or LinkedIn messaging to people, find people that went to your school that, you know, if you graduated, that's a good connection. Hey, I went to the school. I saw you did too. Kind of increases your odds to network. And then, yeah, just try going to in-person events too.
Love it. Well, I appreciate you coming on. This was fascinating and excited to dive deeper at some point, especially as this gets crazier.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. Love to check back in with you in, you know, many months and see how the whole industry goes. It's heating up and the job opportunities are like exponentially increasing too, which is good.